Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
As far back as I could remember, I always wanted to be a gangster.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the Pot of Thunder and Rock and Roll, and it's a first today on Talk is Jericho. We are going to do a classic movie clash. I know, I can't believe I didn't think of it sooner as well. It's just like the classic album clash. I've got an esteemed panel of guests who are going to debate two classic movies and then vote on their favorite at the end. So today's classic movie clash is The Godfather versus Goodfellas, two classic mafia movies by two legendary directors, Francis Ford Coppola and Martin Scorsese. And taking part in today's great debate, Anthrax drummer Charlie Benanti, Fozzy bassist PJ Farley, and Tom and Zeus from the Shout It Out Loud podcast. All of us are huge fans of both movies, but we will pick a favorite in the end. And like the classic album clash, we're debating everything from the casting to the direction to the writing to the performances to the supporting characters. We're talking about favorite lines and scenes, sharing all kinds of great trivia about the making of both movies. I think we forgot to mention that Carmine Caridi, who's in the Godfather series here, was also in Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park. I can't believe none of us mentioned that, considering we're all huge Kiss fans as well. But before we get started, just a quick reminder. There are still cabins left at Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea, Four Leaf Clover at ChrisJerichoCruise.com. We set sail February 2nd, and for the first time ever, we're going to our very own private island in Great Stirrup Cay. Come hang with me and the stocked lineup of talent. Basically, about like three quarters of AEW is going to be on the ship. Go check out the lineup. Swerve Strickland, Jade Cargill, The Acclaimed. I mean, come on, this is name after name after name after name. The Gun Club, it's going to be a huge, huge time. Jungle Boy, it's going to be great. Go to AEW.com and check out the entire lineup. Plus, we're going to determine the first ever Oceanic champion as well. A championship belt has been made, and it's killer, and it will be awarded to one of four on the cruise. One of five, actually. Guys, Matt Cardona, Moose, Cheeseburger, and Dante Martin will square off, face the winner, Flip Gordon, to see who the first champion is going to be. We're going to talk about that belt, too, with creator Dave Milliken in a future episode of Talk is Jericho. Also, we got comedy and music on the ship. Fozzie's doing three shows, live podcast. Dave Schrader, the Paranormal 60. Such a great time. It's the vacation of a lifetime. So come join us now. ChrisJerichoCruise.com. All right, buckle in. It's a wild ride. It's the first ever classic movie clash. The Godfather versus Goodfellas gets started right here, right now, on Talk is Jericho.
What the hell is this?
It's a Sicilian message. It means Luca Brasi sleeps with the fishes.
Famous Talk is Jericho. Every few months we do the classic album clash, and had an idea to do the first ever classic movie clash. And I amassed a rogues gallery of Godfather and Goodfellas fans. And everybody here has done the classic album clash before. PJ from Fozzy and Trickster, and Zeus and Tom from Shout It Out Loudcast, and of course, Charlie from Anthrax. And this is a first, guys. And it really, really fits because these movies, even though they were made pretty much 20 years apart, are really sister movies about the Italian gangsters and the mobs and that sort of thing. Charlie's super excited. This actually started with Charlie and I's idea. These are two of your all-time favorite movies, Charlie?
Yes. Very much so.
Gotcha. And you're also the only true Italian here.
Oh, no.
Oh, Gigliotti.
It's actually pronounced Gelotti. And if you were, and if the Italians were pronouncing it, it would be Gigliotti, because the G and the L together give you the Y sound.
All right.
I'm the De Niro of the bunch.
No, I think he wins. You have more vowels in your name than I do.
Yeah, that's true.
we'll get the Italian perspective and the much appreciated Greek perspective from Zeus.
Right.
That's
right. I'll add some touch.
So let's talk. So Charlie, why don't you start kind of the relationship you have with both these movies, with Godfather and Goodfellas?
Oh, well, I love The Godfather. Without The Godfather, there'd be no Goodfellas. It pretty much set the tone for gangster movies after that. Even though we had gangster movies in the 30s and 40s, you know, James Cagney type of gangster movies, but The Godfather was just done so well. I mean, how can you get a cast like that to do a movie? I mean, getting Brando. And if you guys know anything about the making of The Godfather, it was a bitch to make too.
Right.
There's a series right now called The Offer that pretty much details the whole thing. It's amazing, like what they went through. So for me, The Godfather, I hold it up high, but Goodfellas just kind of, I mean, I just have to put that above The Godfather.
Well, we'll discuss all that and the reasonings for it, but why don't you tell us, Tom?
Yeah, so it's funny, looking at these two movies, I would probably say these are probably two of the, if I was to group the movies I've seen the most times in my life, I would say Goodfellas and Godfather are up there, no doubt, especially with Zeus. Zeus and I, our friendship goes back 30 years. We know every line like everybody else does to both movies. They're both spectacular in their own way, but they're very similar, but they're both very, very different, and I'm sure we're going to get into all that, but it's amazing when you watch both, what you see when you watch each one, what you feel when you watch each one. And when it's over, like you're like your reaction to it, even though you've seen it 100 times. And they're just two of the most rewatchable movies ever made. They're just legendary movies. I can't wait to talk about getting get into it with everybody. It's going to be great.
How about you, Zeus?
Yeah, everybody grew up. I know our age group grew up with The Godfather. There's something like this romantic image of The Godfather, Brando, Coppola, the music, the scenery. Everybody knows it growing up. And I think from there, the only thing that comes close to it probably would be Goodfellas and their imagery of the 70s, late 60s, 70s into early 80s, the way they did it as well. And it's part of like, it's a thing that I would actually add the Sopranos in it, in that trifecta, and you can link them all and how they're so connected. Mm-hmm. Yet each one of them is a little bit different. And there's so many things similar between the Goodfellas and The Godfather, but there's a lot of differences. And they're both just off the charts, best of movies of all time, easily.
What do you think, PJ?
In keeping with the theme of the characters that we have on here tonight, I'll say that Goodfellas is to me what 80s Kiss is to you.
Oh, it's okay.
Like Godfather. 72. I was born in 72. So, of course, I've seen The Godfather a couple of times, obviously. But, I mean, Goodfellas was more, you know, that's really what I cut my teeth on. I, of course, went back and watched The Godfather a bunch of times after knowing where Goodfellas came from, you know. So, you go back. But because I was born in 72, that wasn't my go-to. Whereas Goodfellas was really...
That was the one.
The be-all, end-all of gangster movies. And it's, you know, obviously you have to go and revisit The Godfather and see where it all came, where it all started.
Did you say be all end all just because Charlie's here?
Nice.
So I'll pick it up, and it's going to be a little bit of a controversial story here. Obviously it's very strange. Charlie and I and Mike Portnoy talked about this, how James Caan and Ray Liotta and the Soprano dude, I can't remember what his name
Tony
is.
Tony Sirico.
Yeah. Yeah. All died within a month of each other, 2 months, whatever it is. So I went back and went through a little bit of a James Caan kind of film fest. And one of them was The Godfather. Now, The Godfather to me is a movie, and you're going to kill me for this, I hadn't seen it all the way through from beginning to end. I'd seen every scene jumbled, you know, different, but to watch it from beginning to end It was the first time. I just did that a few weeks ago. Now, obviously, it is everything that we've said that it is. It's unbelievable. It's amazing. Acting performances off the charts, stories off the charts, and we'll get into that. And then it just so happens, I just went to the UK last week and Goodfellas was on the TV. So I went back and watched that again. I'd seen that before. And really hit me just how great both these are, like PJ said, in different ways. But they're very, very similar in the fact, storyline, behind the scenes, the actual acting performances from these cast of characters, some of the greatest of all time. And of course, the direction from Coppola and the direction from Scorsese. And the other thing that I noticed too that's really interesting is The Godfather came out in 1972, March of 1972. And Goodfellas came out in September of 1990. Now, Godfather comes out in the 70s and is basically based in the 50s. And Goodfellas comes out in 90 and it's basically based in the 70s. Both movies are from 20 years prior. And I know there's different time frames, give or take, on either end. But that to me was interesting that both these movies were both filmed 20 years in the past, set 20 years in the past.
Yeah, I think you see that with a lot of movies like that. They, especially in the 90s, Zeus and I have talked about this before. The 90s was very romanticized by the 70s. And then when Godfather came out in the 70s, you saw, you know, a lot of period piece type movies come out, you know, the 40s, the 50s. But I think that's what kind of adds to that charm of the movie is that for when Goodfellas came out in 1990, we knew all those actors already, like from everything that we've seen them in. And then to see them, you know, portrayed in an era that was 20 years prior and then leading up to that 80s, you know, kind of similar with The Godfather, although the difference with The Godfather was a lot of those actors were new to some people. You had like an extremely baby-faced Al Pacino, and Marlon Brando was obviously a legend at that time. I think for me personally, I think that kind of adds to that charm when you're watching a movie that's released today that takes place 20, 25 years prior, and it's so well done the way these both are. I think it just kind of adds to that legacy.
It's interesting too, though, and they talk about this in The Offer. Brando was not popular at the time. He was kind of down and out,
right?
Like he was kind of on a string of bad luck to where the studio was hesitant to cast him and Al Pacino, who was basically an unknown. And they go into that quite in depth in The Offer, don't they, Charlie?
Yeah, they do. And they had a fight for Pacino because they wanted him out. That itself is a crazy story. Coppola had a fight so much for this movie to be made. But think of this. He had to fight just as hard to get Godfather 2 made. He had to mortgage his house. He had to do all these things to get that movie made after the Academy Awards and all this stuff. The studio wouldn't give him all the money. So he went through hell to make these two movies.
Very interesting. Once again, they didn't want to cast Pacino because he was an unknown Broadway actor. And that's another thing too, and Tom mentioned it, that Godfather was made where all these guys were up-and-comers. Coppola as well, hadn't really had any big movies. Whereas Goodfellas, Scorsese's already at the top of his game, made classic movies. I mean, De Niro's already established himself as one of the great actors, as had Joe Pesci. So you kind of had the two different spectrums of a movie that was made with a bunch of unknowns in a lot of ways, and then the movie that was made with all of these kind of big, big stars and you know, successful people.
Well, didn't Pacino, he was in a movie called Panic in Needle Park. Before The Godfather, because Serpico was after The Godfather.
Yeah.
So, but Coppola just felt so drawn to this guy, to his acting, that he was Michael. And man, that takes a lot. You know what I mean? For a director to just go out on a limb and say, I can't make this movie without him. And also, I have to go to Italy to shoot those scenes too, you know, after he was way over budget. Could you imagine that back then?
Could you imagine if he didn't stick to his gun and fight for Pacino? Because call me crazy, but without Al Pacino, that movie is not the same. Even with Brando and that cast, Pacino adds an element to that movie that just completely raises it.
Absolutely.
He just adds another dimension to the movie. Just his facial expressions, his delivery is absolutely different than anyone else on the screen. All that fighting really paid off because you can't touch that movie because of Pacino in it.
Plus, you open it up to women. Mm. That's why women went to see The Godfather, because of Pacino.
Right.
And maybe the older woman went to see Marlon Brando. I mean, yeah. I mean, Coppola, he knew what he was doing.
It's so funny, though, like when you talk about Pacino getting into the movie later on in life. And even when I was a kid, obviously in the 80s, you hear about The Godfather. I used to read, you know, Mad Magazine. They do The Godfather parodies with, like, you know.
It's awesome.
What's the cat's name that drew you guys in the back of A State of Euphoria, Charlie? What was his name?
Mort Drucker.
Yeah, Mort Drucker drawing the – but I never realized that this was the beginning of Al Pacino's career. I just thought it was another Al Pacino big movie. So like you said, the fact that they brought him in and everybody was for him except for the actual producers because they said he was too short.
Yeah.
When has that ever been an issue ever in acting? He's too short. I mean, I was really blown away that even was a factor back in the early 70s.
Yeah.
PJ said it best about Pacino kind of making because a lot of people, you think of Brando for obvious reasons, of course.
Right.
But the character, the arc of Michael, you know, how you're introduced to him as this baby-faced military guy coming back. And then the arc of his entire character, you know, through the first one and obviously into the second one. That to me, when I think of The Godfather, I think of Michael and I think of Pacino. And you know, PJ said it great. I think he is, to me personally, he is The Godfather. Everybody lionizes Brando for good reasons. I mean, the cheeks and the lines that he had and obviously, you know, legendary greatest performance of all time, if not one of them. But I think Pacino is the key for me.
All right. This is the gift that keeps on giving and it's all thanks to Mint Mobile. Because right now, when you switch to Mint Mobile and buy any 3-month plan, you'll get another 3 months for free. So go to mintmobile.com/Jericho and get hooked up with this awesome deal. It's Mint Mobile's best offer of the year, and you get it at mintmobile.com/Jericho. As the first company to sell premium wireless service online only, Mint Mobile lets you order and activate from home with an eSIM, and their plans start at just $15 a month. And all Mint Mobile plans come with unlimited talk and text, plus high-speed data, delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. You can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan, or if you need a new device, for a limited time, you can get 6 months of free service when you select device and plan. The holidays can get expensive, but switching to Mint Mobile will save you money in the long run. So do yourself and your wallet a favor, switch to Mint Mobile, and for a limited time, buy any 3-month Mint Mobile plan and get 3 more months free. Just go to mintmobile.com/Jericho. That's mintmobile.com/Jericho. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/Jericho. Now that's good looking out.
It was easy for all of us to disappear. My house was in my mother-in-law's name. My cars were registered to my wife. My social security cards and driver's licenses were phonies. I never voted. I never paid taxes. My birth certificate and my arrest sheet. That's all you'd ever have to know I was alive.
Let's talk a little bit about the Goodfellas cast. Was Ray Liotta, was this his first big movie? As far as you guys know, had he done anything before?
Yeah.
I think this was what Father was for Pacino, Goodfellas was for Ray Liotta. Because, again, without Ray Liotta and Goodfellas, you got a different movie.
Ray was in Field of Dreams.
Field of Dreams. He played
Shoeless Joe.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a big, big part.
Yeah.
Yeah. And once again, it's funny because to play Henry Hill, they wanted Sean Penn, Alec Baldwin, Val Kilmer, Tom Cruise. And for Jimmy Conway, they wanted Al Pacino.
Yeah.
So it's like things go in cycles. So once again, they had to take a chance on using this relative unknown Ray Liotta. But had he not been in the movie, like you said, it would be a completely different flick at that point.
And plus, if you had someone of that nature already, I don't know, I think it would have lost a little something. You know, the fact that Ray wasn't a huge superstar like Pacino wasn't, it was fresh, even though he'd been in things before, but he wasn't, you know, the superstar he was after this movie. And I think it would have taken, not to say it would have been a distraction from the movie, because it's still a great movie. He's still got a great cast behind him. But I think a more popular face might have changed it a little bit. Not for the better.
Yeah, I agree with you, PJ, because if you have a big name star there, I mean, the character's supposed to be looking up to the other two. It's hard to see a movie knowing Sean Penn, who he is, and being like the guy that's just following Joe Pesci and Robert De Niro and not being to their peer. I think Ray Liotta, because you don't even know who he is really as a movie goer seeing him. And you're like, oh, shit, who's this guy? And then you see his role grow and grow and grow. And I think it actually adds to the film that you don't know who he is as a big name. I think you're right on that.
Yep, it does.
And I also think, too, I think PJ may have touched on it, was I think Liotta's appearance, kind of a baby face, the blue eyes, kind of the young guy. And to me personally, I think later on, the way that Scorsese hitched his wagon to Leonardo DiCaprio, I think that Scorsese may have had his sights set on Liotta to be that guy, because Leonardo has a lot of similarities to Ray Liotta. And a lot of the, I mean, you look at like The Departed, kind of the same thing, or even all those other movies that he did with Scorsese. I think Scorsese saw Ray Liotta and was like, this guy can be the next big thing. And for some crazy reason, it didn't really happen the way I think it happened for Leonardo.
Ironically, if you think about it, Leonardo, he looks like the kid who played young.
Yes.
Hill.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Talking about De Niro's performance in Goodfellas, because he's kind of the one crossover in the fact that, you know, obviously he wasn't in The Godfather, but he was, you know, a young Vito Corleone in Godfather 2. De Niro is one of Scorsese's bullpen guys, one of his muses, uses him all the time. It was interesting to me to see that he is like the epitome of a mafia gangster in movie history. It's De Niro. He's probably done it in a couple other movies as well.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what he does the best, I think, even though he's later on in life become huge in comedy. Who knew? Go figure.
Right.
But like you take James Caan, who basically plays the same character in every movie. Doesn't matter the role. He's the same guy.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
It's amazing.
If you look at De Niro, he's not an intimidating looking gangster. Like in all his movies, he's not the big strong guy or a big fat Italian looking man that you're like, oh, that's the Don. But he has this way of like scaring the shit out of you throughout that movie. Like you could tell just watching his acting, like when he's looking over at Maury and you're like, oh, shit, he's going to fucking kill this guy.
Yeah.
And you're like scared, or he's sending, oh, no, right around the corner. Just keep going. Helen Karen, just go. And you're like, oh, shit, this is a scary man. And why do you feel that way? Because of De Niro and his acting. He's that good. And him and Pacino are just in their own element, their own zone, I think.
If you run the parallel to from Raging Bull to Goodfellas, the two of them in Raging Bull were basically gangsters, you know, playing those parts. The two brothers. And then when you put them in Goodfellas, the great thing about that movie is like, I don't associate them with Raging Bull. They're completely different characters, you know, that they're horrible people. And someone asked me one time about, what is it about monsters that you like, that you love to watch monster movies? And I said, I just love them, like Goodfellas. That's a monster movie. Mm-hmm. Joe Pesci character, that's a fucking monster, dude. I mean, for me, growing up in the Bronx, we used to see these gangsters in cappuccino places, and then they would be in the back playing cards or something, you know. And the way Scorsese creates these scenes, it was so like, wow, I've seen this before. And that's the same with De Niro and Pesci. They grew up in this, so they knew how to act.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And a lot of it was ad lib too. It's not even in the script.
Right.
That whole story about what am I, a clown? That wasn't even in the script. It was something that had happened.
Yeah.
And they just improvised. And for me, that's magic right there. When you watch that scene, how nervous does it make you feel? You know, when that scene comes up, you know, it's just amazing.
I'm funny how? I mean, funny like I'm a clown. I amuse you. I make you laugh. What do you mean funny? Funny how? How am I funny?
That was actually what Charlie's alluding to, is I guess Pesci was a waiter or something along those lines.
Yep.
And said that to a mobster. Oh, you're funny. And the guy took offense. What do you mean I'm funny? What does that mean? And then you realize, like, it's just like when you piss somebody off in a bar or at high school. It's like, uh-oh, this guy wants to fight me and there's nothing I can do about it. Anything I say, you don't say anything at all. You're not going to say nothing. You're screwed either way.
But that's why if you watch that scene, pay attention to Ray Liotta's expression.
Oh, yeah.
And at the end, when the joke breaks and Ray Liotta goes, get the gotta hit. Like, that's a that's real. Because he's right. Like, holy, like, you just totally played me right now in that scene. And you could see the relief. He's like, oh, okay, well, you were just messing with me.
Yeah, he was waiting to see how that was going to play out himself.
Yeah.
We were.
And then De Niro and Pesci, they do it again in Casino. And Pesci's even more insane in Casino than he is in Goodfellas.
Yeah.
Was Casino was also a Scorsese movie, wasn't it?
Yeah, there you go, right?
Yep.
Yep.
Let's talk a little bit about Brando, about his performance. It's obviously bigger than Anthony Hopkins' Hannibal Lecter, but I was really, and I once again, I knew all this stuff, but it's very fresh in my mind. I was really surprised at Brando, you know, Don Corleone getting shot and basically taken out of the movie like 40 minutes in. It's like he's just getting started. And then he's gone until the end. And he's got quite a lengthy piece at the end. But there's the whole middle of that movie with no Brando in it. It makes that performance even more special.
It's kind of like playing your hit early in the set.
Yeah.
You got to be pretty damn cocky to play Don't Stop Believing second.
Right.
You know,
which they did.
We're going to sit Brando in the middle, you know, in the first hour. They know what they had.
Chris, I just watched these Godfather 1 and 2 with my 18-year-old son. He wanted to see them, and thank God he loved them both.
Right.
But when that scene, when Brando gets shot, my son's like, wait, what? Already? Like, I don't know, like, we're only like 45 minutes into the movie. Like you said, Chris, he's like, wait, I don't understand.
Because
everybody has this image of this three-hour epic of Marlon Brando just commanding the screen the entire time.
Well, you know, it's just like Anthony Hopkins. He won an Oscar for Hannibal Lecter. I think he has 15 minutes screen time or something along those lines. So
it's
not the time, it's the performance. And one thing I really loved about watching Brando, and obviously people forget as generations go on and years go on, the guy was just a freak actor and was completely insane, as you guys can see in The Offer, if you know anything about his stories with, you know, when they filmed The Island of Dr. Moreau and Superman and all the crazy shit he was doing. But I loved his performance. Obviously, he put the cotton in his jaws.
I want you to arrange a meeting with the heads of the five families.
He did this quite a bit. If you look, he scratches his face. Yeah. It's like a nervous tick that he comes up with. And if you're an actor or appreciate acting, that's not in the script. That's just Brando's thing. He scratches his face. Do we know any of the reasons why he put the cotton in his jaws or anything like that? Was that ever explained, or was that just a choice that he made?
I don't know if it was more for appearance sake or if it was more for like speaking to like give that really low kind of growl, kind of commanding presence of like a soft spoken, but yet like effective and really unique type of vocal tone. I think, you know, I wanted
to affect his voice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not put on a voice, but physically do something to change how he
changes his voice. Yeah.
Right. Right.
They talk about that too, don't they, Charlie, in The Offer when they meet Brando and he says that he envisions that Don Corleone got shot in the throat or something like that, which made this voice gravelly.
Yeah, this, you know, there's a cat that Brando's petting.
Yep.
That was never in the script either.
Yeah.
That was just on the set, and then the cat was just crawling around, and Brando took it. Maybe that's why he was doing this. Maybe he was allergic to the cat.
You know what? Let's give it up for the cat, because the cat, that cat played a great part. He even grabbed his hand to make him keep petting him. Stuff. Like, he nailed his part.
You'd be great, man. The Oscar the Cat was up for the Oscars of the Cat Awards.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Fredo, you're my older brother, and I love you. But don't ever take sides with anyone against the family again.
How about some of the other characters within these movies? Which ones, which characters stuck out to you that weren't the Pacinos and De Niros and Brandos of the world? Zeus?
Oh, that's easy. That's John Casale, who's been in only Academy Award winning movies. I think he's from Watertown. He's from Mass.
Yep.
Yeah. And he grew up with Pacino in the theater. And if you go to his movies, I think he was in five, and they were all nominated Academy Awards.
Yeah, he has like the greatest IMDb ever.
Yeah, Godfather 1, 2, The Conversation, Dog Day Afternoon, and Deer Hunter.
Jeez.
And technically, he was in, I think, Godfather 3 as a flashback.
Yeah.
And that was nominated for an Academy Award. So, I mean, I find him so unbelievable. That whole trying to help Papa, and he's down, breaks down crying when Don Vito gets shot, and he's just bumbling. I mean, obviously, the way he plays in part two, but we're not talking about that. I loved his character. I love Fat Clemenza. I thought he was hilarious. And he's so believable. When Sonny looks over, and I love that whole gangster stuff. Well, you okay, Paulie? You all right? Yo, go get it. Go in there. And as soon as Paulie walks out of the room, he looks to him. He's like, I don't want to see that guy again. And maybe Clemenza likes him. Maybe it's his buddy. He just gives him a look like, all right, I'll do it.
Yeah, take him out.
Oh, my God. It's so subtle.
Now, Clemenza, that was Richard Castellano. And then Bruno Kirby plays him in Godfather 2, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Yep.
Which Bruno Kirby is great in Godfather 2 as well. Luca Brasi is great in 1. Yes. And that was one of my, when he got it in the hand, that was, I was just like, oh man.
A classic scene, yeah.
That's a classic scene. It's so intense. And of course, he sleeps with the fishes.
The classic. Another thing too, Charlie, just to interject quickly, is that Luca Brasi was played by a guy called Lenny Montana, who was a professional wrestler for many years, which I had no idea. I was reading about him today, and not just like he had a couple matches. He had a long wrestling career all throughout the 60s in all these different companies and territories across America. So a little bit of a pro wrestling tie in there. Continue, Charlie.
But he was also a gangster too.
Yeah, he was a gangster. Yeah. Yeah.
And he wasn't even really an actor. So that scene when he's talking to Vito, when he's nervous about, when he's like kind of stuttering, like that was like real.
Yeah.
And they wanted to keep that in there.
He was nervous to talk to Brando for real. So Coppola kept that in there because that was legit.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it makes it so good because you have this mountain of a man who doesn't look like he would be afraid of anything. And he's just like,
Yeah. And Brando's reaction, like,
Yeah.
Oh, that was just great.
So continue, Charlie. What were you saying?
I was going to say that maybe you guys don't feel the same way as me, but I always thought that the women in The Godfather 1, Diane Keaton is a great actress. I felt that they were so overshadowed.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'm still questioning why he would put his sister in that role.
Right.
Talia Shire. Yeah. This is before Rocky, too. Mm-hmm. When I still watch The Godfather, to me, that's the weakest part is that, you know, just doesn't do it for me. Everybody else is so strong, but that just kind of, I don't know, always bothered me a bit.
Talia Shire?
Yeah.
I think it's the part itself. I mean,
the era, the time.
It was part of the story, but it really didn't, it wasn't a picture stealing part.
Yeah.
Not a lot of room for her.
Yeah.
I loved, Tessio.
Oh, yeah.
Which, of course, is played by the great Abe Vigoda from Barney Miller. But he was so good in this because he's just kind of like this background guy. He's got a couple good lines, but his best line is at the end when he betrays the family.
Yeah.
And then he asks Michael, can you get me off the hook on this one?
Can't do it, Sally.
Can't do it, Sally. Yeah. And it was just like,
for old time's sake.
For old time's sake.
Yeah. What a great line. Can you get me off the hook on this one? Like, can you not kill me, please? It's like, no.
Yeah. Can you not kill me?
How about in Goodfellas, some of the other characters? Obviously, we talked about Joe Pesci as the psycho Tommy DeVito, but there's a couple other really good characters in that one as well.
I'll tell you what, actually, on the topic of the women, this is just the opposite. I think some of the Karen,
exactly.
All the wives, very quotable lines. You know, I want to go shopping. How much do you need? That much. Anything that Karen said was quotable. I mean, the women really kind of shined in this one.
Yeah, some of the side characters or supporting cast for me were some of the Frank Vincent playing Billy Bats. Frankie Carbone, you know, Paul Sorvino, like all those guys are just, they're so memorable and they don't have a ton of screen time, but every time they're on the screen, they're doing or saying something that is just, I mean, that whole shine box scene in the bar with Frank Vincent.
Oh, so good.
I mean, come on. I mean, I love those guys.
You mentioned all that stuff, and it's like the thing about Goodfellas is when that movie starts, it never stops. You have to buckle yourself in because it takes you on such a ride that, oh my God, by the time he's doing all that blow and he's seeing helicopters and all this stuff, it's just like so intense. But the thing about Goodfellas that I love is the dark humor in that movie.
Totally.
There's so many things that kind of disarm you that these guys are horrible, but we love them.
Pesci with their, what am I asking you here? I'm trying to bang his brother.
Oh, that's
two things that Martin Scorsese does, and he does it so well, is he does one shot. He just goes through. Remember when they're going into the Copa?
Oh yeah, that's incredible.
Oh yes
through the kitchen. That's all one shot.
Yeah,
it's so amazing, man. I just love when he does stuff like that because it's just so brilliant, you know.
Mm-hmm. I mean that kitchen scene, I was just going to bring that up. The minute they walk down those stairs, it's not just like, all right, I'm going to film you walking for 2.5 minutes nonstop. You guys talk to each other. They're walking past people. There's cues. There's other people in that scene.
Yeah.
I can't imagine how long that took to get everyone to do their job spot on.
Yeah, it's just amazing.
I was reading that Scorsese said he wanted the movie to be like one, I don't know if it's 2 hours long, a 2 hour long movie trailer. Mm. Where, like you said, once it starts, it doesn't stop. Like a trailer.
Yeah.
You're watching this happens, this happens, this happens. And there really isn't a lot of fat in that movie. It's a very long, expansive story that takes place over 20, 30 years even. But it doesn't feel like it because of that pace that they set.
Yeah, and I think the characters, this is what we talked about, how the two movies are similar but so different. And Charlie kind of hinted at one of the starkest differences is the humor.
Right.
Whether it's dark humor or quote unquote, like real humor, that scene when they got Billy Batts in the trunk of the car and they go have dinner with Joe Pesci's mother.
Yeah.
Right. With that line, you know, look at this guy. He's got one dog looking this way, one dog looking that way. And this guy's going, what do you want from me? You know, and they're all just like laughing, you know, and it's like, and meanwhile, there's a body in the trunk of the car. It's just, it's hilarious stuff.
That's how the movie starts, though.
Right. Yeah.
You know, the three of them, they're in the car.
Yes.
And all of a sudden you hear Billy Batts trying to get out. Meanwhile, right. It's just because you don't understand it until the scene happens. And it's like, oh, yeah, of course, you know.
Right.
Like the way Quentin Tarantino shoots his stuff, you know. But Pesci's insane. When he's on that screen, you cannot stop. You can't look away, man. It's just so powerful.
Yep. Yeah, there's a couple small lines that he does. This one after they kill, what's his name? A young Samuel Jackson.
Oh, Stax.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And he's like, take the coffee and go. And he's holding. He goes, what the f*** you doing? You still don't take the coffee. And back. Digging up the body again. Here's a leg. Here's a wing.
Here's a wing.
Yeah. Like you look at that. Like, they just killed their friend. No thoughts about it. Just murdered him. And like, and they making jokes, or this other one, digging up a dead body after 6 months, and they, you know, cracking jokes.
What is the first hole I dug?
Yeah. But that's the thing that's so crazy about Pesci and why we all have met people like this. We're like, this guy could blow it and ruin everything. And like, literally, like when he shoots Spider.
Yeah.
When the guy says, why don't you go off? And he just shoots him. And then he's like, wow, he was rude or whatever. He says, like, in wrestling, the heel always has a kernel of truth that makes him believe what he did was right, yeah. Even though it was completely wrong. Right. In his mind, he told me to fuck off. Of course I shot him. What do you want me to do? Yeah, so he gets the first, I'll bury him. And it's just like, this guy's crazy, man.
And that scene alone, when De Niro is standing up and he's like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah.
You know, you know, awesome. you're gonna go dig the hole. I'm not doing it.
That's the best line in that scene. De Niro's just pissed off that now somebody has to dig a hole.
Come on.
Yeah. Exactly.
They don't care that they just killed their bartender because he insulted Joe Pesci. De Niro's like, ah, now you gotta dig the hole. Like it's, you
know, it's what's like, so you're cleaning it up.
Right, but
you're cleaning it up then.
Yeah.
But Henry Hill is the only one that has some sort of compassion.
Yes.
He gets emotional. He's like, he's dead.
Yeah.
You know, he killed the guy. He's like, so what? His family was a bunch of rats. He'd be a rat too.
Yeah, he was a rat too.
Yeah.
He somehow figures it out.
They jump on that in The Sopranos in the first season. I don't know if you guys remember this, where the same actor that plays him, I forget, Michael Imperioli.
Michael Imperioli, that's right.
Yeah, comes in and shoots the baker guy in the foot too in season yes. one. And he's like, and he shoots him in the foot. It's like, oh, I remember relax. That. Yeah, yeah, yeah. yeah. I love that little tip of the hat to Goodfellas.
I like this one. The dog, one dog goes one way and the other dog goes the other way.
One is going east and the other one is going west. So what?
And this guy's saying, what do you want from me? Guy's got a nice head of white hair. Look how beautiful with the dog. It looks the same.
Looks like somebody we know.
Another thing about both these movies that I really enjoy, especially watching them pretty much back to back, is, I guess, getting lured into dying, getting lured into being assassinated. For example, when, you know, when Joe Pesci is going to become, you know, a made man or whatever it is. And he's never supposed to be a made man. Tommy's just getting, he's supposed to show up for this meeting. And as soon as he shows up, he knows, oh, fucking down, he's done. Same thing with Sonny Corleone when he pulls up at the toll booth. There's all of these moments where you're like, oh, no, don't do it. Like with Talia Shire's husband, when they end up garroting him in the car when he was,
yeah.
he wasn't supposed to be murdered. He was just going to be excommunicated from the family. And it's just like, it's so underhanded.
No, it's a great point. And that show that like Charlie was saying about monsters, they're not just walking up to them and just popping them. It's like these long drawn out schemes to kill these guys and set them up and put them at ease.
Right.
Like Joe Pesci walking into that room. You watch that scene, you know, he's got a big smile on his face and he's like, oh, shit.
He's on
like,
top of the world, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
What about who? Let's go through the panel here. What's the best fight scene? Is it Ray Liotta with the gun on the neighbor, or is it Sonny? beating him over the head with a shoe.
Sonny beating the shit out of Carlo with a trash can lid. I mean, Ray Liotta, I still don't know how he did not smash that guy's skull into 100 pieces with that pistol.
Yeah.
But Sonny just kicking him into the gutter and just throwing trash on him and beating him with a trash can lid. That's just my son. When we were watching that movie, he was like, James Caan just owns that. And he's, you know, he's got the wife beater on his
big shoulders.
Yeah. It was awesome. Yeah. Yeah, his big shoulders. Up. He's like, just a great scene.
James Caan, he's so hairy on his back. He looks like he was changing a tire. Like, older. This guy.
You know, the scene, he wasn't supposed to do certain things that he did. Coppola knew he was going to do it, but no one else knew he was going to do it. He brought the bat out of the car. That wasn't in the script. He did that himself, and he threw it at him. He wasn't supposed to hit him with the garbage can. That was another thing. He really hurt the guy.
It came across, though. What a scene.
He bites his...
Oh, yeah, when he's biting his knuckles.
That's acting.
Let's talk about the family element of it. And once again, with Tom and Charlie being from Italian families, it always goes back. And it's what Coppola says in The Offer, played by Dan Fogel, who does a tremendous job as Coppola. It's like, this is not a movie about the mafia. It's a movie about families, an American family. They're very much, even though these families are completely psycho and they're murderers, they still will go and, you know, make dinner for each other with the sausages and the sauce. I mean, was that part of it fairly representative of a true Italian family?
Oh, every Sunday for making the sauce, making the homemade meatballs, cutting up the sausages and the pork and doing all that. And yeah, absolutely. I mean, with the exception of killing people, yeah, we did Sunday dinners, you know, kind of that was a big tradition. Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate. Sundays were Sundays, you know, you would eat at probably 3 o'clock.
Yep.
So that, you know, my father and my uncles could go watch football and whatever, baseball, you know. So I could tell you, like, my mom would start cooking early by 11, 12, you know, noon. She'd give us a dish of, like, the gravy she would make with some bread, and that's this is the greatest thing. And so when I watch those movies, I think back to my childhood. Another movie that's really close to this, too, is A Bronx Tale.
Mm. Oh, absolutely, yes.
Yeah. That could have been, like, going on down the road from Goodfellas, you know what I mean?
Right.
The way that movie is made. But I also have to say that while a lot of people didn't like The Irishman, I loved The Irishman.
Oh, I loved it.
I loved it. It was long, but I didn't care. If there's any place that I could see these guys together again, and I'll tell you another funny story. I went to Lucasfilm in California, up in San Francisco, they were telling us that a week prior to me being there, Pesci, De Niro, and Al Pacino were there to get the CGI done, and they all had dots on their head, on their faces and everything. And once they finished, they said they were all kind of tipsy and they wanted to know where's a good place to eat. And they sent them to this restaurant. And they said as they were walking out, they were like, laughing and everything. And it was like such a great day with them. And when I watch The Irishman, I think of that. Like they had such a good time together.
Yeah.
Because Pacino, especially in that movie, I thought was great.
Mm-hmm.
He played Jimmy Hoffa. I thought he did a great job. But yeah. I don't see Pacino in Goodfellas. I just don't.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I'm glad he wasn't in it because he didn't want to kind of cross-contaminate. He's part of the Goodfellas. I mean, I'm...
The Godfather lore. Yeah, well, he's all three Godfathers too, right? So he's really locked in
with that. Right, right. Yeah.
But then you have Donnie Brasco. Don't you think... What about that, Charlie?
I love Donnie Brasco. We're missing the whole thing with, you know, him playing... Come on, what's the most successful character that he's played besides Michael Corleone?
Who?
Oh, geez.
Son of a Woman?
No, come on. One of the biggest gangsters.
I mean, I would say Dog Day Afternoon, Serpico. Are you talking about Carlito's Way?
No, we're missing. You're missing the greatest movie from. Come on, he's from.
Oh, Scarface. Yeah.
You guys are scaring me for
Jeez,
a minute.
Louise. I'm thinking like, Sea of Love.
Yeah, edit that out. I'm like Dog Day Afternoon.
I'm thinking Meet the Parents. Or Meet the Father.
Talk about a movie that he carried the whole movie.
Yeah,
that to me is Pacino's greatest screen. I mean, I like it better than Corleone, but that's just me.
And the other funny thing too, Chris, was that Goodfellas came out the same year that Godfather 3 came out. They were both 1990.
Right.
So when you talk about the Pacino, that cross-contamination thing, I mean, you wonder if he even would have entertained being in Goodfellas if there was no Godfather 3. I don't know. Who knows?
You were talking about them eating, Charlie. I got a great story about Brando. I did a book signing at a library in Toms River, New Jersey. And afterwards, there was an Italian restaurant. The guy was there, come to my restaurant. It was a famous Italian restaurant for Toms River, whatever. Told me this story that like in 75 or 78, Brando was there eating. And they used to have a downstairs area, secret, where guys would play cards and gamble. And they said to Brando, the waiter came and said, someone wants to meet you. And Brando said, I'm eating. He said, okay, I'll tell him that you're eating. Later came back with 30 minutes later, somebody wants to meet you. He said, I'm eating. He said, okay, he's waiting for you. He goes, 30 minutes later, okay, I'm finished eating. Where is this guy? Come with me. They go inside the kitchen. They go down to the secret door downstairs. And sitting at the table playing cards is John Gotti.
Oh, there you go.
And the guy goes, Godfather, meet the Godfather.
Nice. Wow.
And he said they hung out till 5 in the morning drinking and playing cards and all that sort of shit. So,
nice.
Wow.
So as we start to wind down here, a few different things. What are some of the standout scenes for you guys? We can start with the Godfather. What are some of your favorite scenes if you had to pick one just from the Godfather?
I always think of this one line for some reason, and it's not even one of the popular things. For some reason, I don't know, maybe it's, again, going back to Pacino's delivery, but when him and Kay are walking after they get reunited, and he's like, you know, my father, businessman, whatever, you know, this is what happens when you're in charge of people, because like presidents or senators. He goes, Michael, presidents and senators don't have people killed. And she goes, you're being naive. He goes, Kay, who's being naive?
Yeah. Great scene. Zeus?
All right, for me, it's the whole Sollozzo scene. Tom and I quote this all the time.
Well, give us some quotes. Tell us about it.
In your pockets. Wait a minute. You mean to tell me? And then that king look that Brando gives to James Caan. He looks like, I spoil my children, as you can see. They talk when they should be listening. Right. That whole scene. And there's something about those actors. Like the actor that plays Sollozzo, those fucking eyes of his. Him and Pacino throughout The Godfather, like they can act without saying a friggin' word.
Mm-hmm.
Just their eyes when they look.
Just their eyes.
When he looks at Fredo and he gives him the warning about don't ever go against the family.
Yeah.
You're like, holy.
Exactly.
Shit. And it's just the eyes. Or Sollozzo when he sits down at the dinner table before they look at him and it's quiet and they're bringing the food and the waiter and they don't want to talk because the waiter's around. And the Sollozzo is just looking at him with these big, dark eyes like a shark. It's just amazing. But that whole Sollozzo scene, he comes in. They call him the Turk. Yeah. He's good with the knife. What about his prison record? One here and one overseas. Oh,
and to go back to Goodfellas, one of the best scenes is, and again, it's a Ray Liotta thing, and it's about delivery. It's the way he says things. And when Karen says, you know, they get to the restaurant, they get to the table, he goes, you know, what do you do for a living? He goes, I'm in construction. She picks up his hand. She goes, you don't look like you're in construction. He goes, I'm a union delegate. The way he says it so nonchalantly, it's like that was in his back pocket. Boom.
Yeah.
Now shut up. You know, I mean, it's his delivery.
Absolutely.
For me, for The Godfather, you got a 3-hour movie with every scene. For me, I would have to go with near the end of the movie, the baptism scene, just because of the juxtaposition of them being in a church, saying all of those words, do you renounce Satan? Yes. And then going over and seeing all the heads of the families being wiped out at the exact time that he's baptizing his godchild or his child. That is a mastercraft in like filmmaking and the tension, the music that is kind of swelling as the whole thing happens. It's just incredible. And then that's when you really see the full transition of Michael Corleone. Like now he is just, like Charlie said, he's a monster.
It's almost like the Walter White type of a transformation, isn't it?
Good call.
Yeah. But that scene is one of my favorite scenes, the one you just talked about. But my other favorite scene is when Michael does the hit in the restaurant.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
And he goes into the bathroom, looks for the gun. The way that whole scene plays out, and he just comes out, shoots, and Sterling Hayden grabs his throat. Oh. And then the camera, the point of view, Michael just walks towards it and just kind of just drops the gun and just, that's it. He cannot go back anymore. That's it. He's in and that's it.
Yeah.
And I think that scene is a pivotal scene because him doing that, that's it. I can't go back anymore. I'm in.
The thing about it too that's so cool is he doesn't do what Clemenza tells him to do. Clemenza tells him to drop the gun. And like you said, he's gone too far. He's like, okay, and he just basically throws it down. See you later, buddy. I'm out.
Well, there's so much emphasis put on two shots in it. The minute you walk out the door, two shots in at each, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You sit down at the table and you're like, no, he's not doing it. He's not doing
it. Yeah, he only shot him once.
Yeah.
He almost runs out without dropping the gun, then he finally drops the gun. So.
Yep. Right, because I think he's so stunned by the whole thing and what he's just done that he's walking out with the gun, and I think he remembers, and he just kind of like,
Yeah, that's exactly right, yeah. I love the scene, and it's more just for Brando's performance when Sollozzo's pitching him the drug business, and he listens, and like a true gentleman, I must say no to you. And I'll give you my reasons.
Yes.
And just the way he said that, I just like, man, that was such a cool line. He's very polite. He's not saying this is stupid. I must say no to you. Here's the reason why.
Yeah.
And then at the end of it, he wishes him luck at the end. Like, yeah, I'm still going to say no. Good luck to you, sir. You know, and see you later. And of course, that leads to him getting shot, right?
Yep.
Yeah, especially since his business and don't interfere with mine, right?
That's right.
Right.
But the other one last thing I wanted to add is, and because of The Godfather and the lore behind it, I'll go down these YouTube holes and you start watching, you read in the comments and things pop out. And there's a part in there where they're like, how did he know where that it was Barzini and not Tattaglia? And they're like, if you watch the filming, the way, if you look at the direction that's done, and you look at the Don's eyes, you can see him looking at Tattaglia, and Tattaglia's looking at Barzini and like kind of almost hinting at him, say it.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden Barzini's the one doing the talking, what Tattaglia wants. And then he's looking and they cut to the Don, and Don's eyes is like, that's where he picks it up. You can almost see the thing goes off that he knows it's not this guy, not the pimp, it's Barzini.
Right.
Incredible stuff.
Hey, but before we go into the Goodfellas scenes, I want to ask you guys one question about Goodfellas. Remember the scene when Karen is coming out of the building and Robert De Niro, Jimmy, is down the street.
Yeah.
And he says, hey, I got some new... What do you think was going to happen there? You think he was going to have her killed?
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
No, over there.
He waves it off last minute. He let him off the hook.
Yeah. I want to believe that he wouldn't, but yeah, I think he would have had her whacked at that point because
Yeah. Both those guys were over the edge psychos at that point.
They would have done anything, right?
Hey, Jimmy, what's right is right. You understand what I'm talking about?
It's all right.
I mean, the kids over here, we're hugging and kissing over here, and 2 minutes later, he's acting like a f***ing jerk.
No. You insulted him a little bit. You got a little out of order yourself.
I didn't insult him a little bit. No, I didn't insult nobody. Give us a drink.
So a favorite scene for Goodfellas, Charlie? What you got one?
Dude, this is the hardest one. I explained the one earlier with the one camera.
Yeah.
And then there's the other one where he goes through each guy, Jimmy, two times, you know, get the papers. And then that is probably one of my favorite scenes. And man, but there's too many. I'd have to say Billy Batts was probably the scene that
gruesome
and just like, wow, they're all in this. And Henry, even though he didn't hit Billy Batts, he does go with cigarette in hand all the time and locks the door, you know, to make sure.
Yeah, that's right.
This doesn't get out. But I think Henry was the one who had more thought than any of them, you know, about any of this, because it was going to come back to bite them in the ass. But there's so many iconic scenes in this movie. How do you pick one, you know? Another scene with Paul Sorvino, when they're talking about him and he's just sitting there eating the sausage and peppers, just slow.
Yeah.
And everybody feared this guy. He didn't say much, but when he said it, so I don't know. I have too many parts in the
story. Somebody's got to choose a Maury scene.
Maury's wigs.
Poor Maury.
Even he got hit at the end, didn't he?
Yeah, when he goes, I never thought it'd shut the fuck up.
Did I?
Poor Maury. We thought he was safe for a while. Maybe Maury's going to be okay. Not just
PJ, you got a favorite scene?
In Goodfellas? Maybe I should pick a Maury scene. I could have dropped the dime on him. Did I? I actually love that scene, Charlie, you were talking about. I was going to bring it up when he's talking to Karen and he just keeps going, keep going. But when Henry wakes up with Karen with a gun in his face.
Karen.
We can go on for days. How do you pick a good, which favorite Beatles song, you know?
Right. I love, obviously, the funny scene, just Ray Liotta's laughing, which, of course, is one of the most famous GIFs and memes of all time, because it never stops. It's not like it's a one-second thing. He just keeps laughing and laughing and laughing. It's so ridiculous, right? But the one scene that I really love is when they go, I think it's the Lufthansa robbery, and then they tell everyone, lay low, don't do anything. Yeah. And then one by one, they show up at the club with a fur coat, a new car, and De Niro's losing his mind. Take it back.
It's the best.
What are you stupid? And then, of course, he ends up killing everybody who bought shit.
Everybody.
Exactly. It's like,
geez. What did I say?
It was a gift from my mother-in-law.
Yeah. It's a good story. It's a story.
I don't care to bring it back.
It's a story. It's in my mother's name.
Yeah. Take it back.
Take it off.
It's like you had one job. Don't buy anything, you fucking idiots. You all went and bought stuff.
Gonna get us all pinched.
Zeus?
I like the part where Henry was talking to Paulie, and Paulie was giving him like his whole reasoning, how somebody just got pinched. He's 75 years old, and he's in jail.
Right.
That's not happening to me. And he was lecturing him and telling him, don't do the drugs. You're going to get pinched. I don't want this coming. It was just.
Yeah.
Because you never saw him explaining himself and talking. You'd always hear Henry say, yeah, Paulie didn't want anybody talking to him directly. It would have to be to somebody else. And then somebody else would come over to Paulie and nobody could overhear the conversation. And you could see just snaps and says it. And then the other thing I would just say, it's a small one, but I like Paulie's brother when that guy gets shot when Henry's a kid. And Henry tries to help the guy out. And his brother's like, you just wasted fucking like 12 aprons on this guy. Because the guy got shot and he's bleeding. And he's like, what the fuck's the matter with you, Henry?
You know who that was? You know who played that?
Who?
That was Michael Jackson's manager.
Really?
Frank DeLeo.
Wow.
Frank DeLeo. That was him.
Really?
Yeah.
Frank DeLeo. There he goes. Tutty Cicero.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
Michael Jackson's manager.
Got to toughen this kid up.
Also in Wayne's World.
Ah, yes.
Frankie.
What do you think, Tom?
Yeah, for me, it's got to be the Shine Box Billy Bat scene at the bar, because it just, to me, that is when Pesci and De Niro, for me, you got De Niro saying, you insult him a little bit. You insult him a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, you know, and then Pesci's like, you know, I don't know if you heard, you've been away for a while. I don't know if you heard, I don't shine shoes no more.
Right.
And he's like, you know, and then Frank Vincent goes, now go get your fucking Shine Box.
Oh, so good.
And Pesci just explodes. And then that other famous gif of De Niro beating him to death with his shoe.
Right.
To me, that's when everybody is just on level 10 right there.
Yeah.
A lot of gold in those movies, man.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Oh. So last question. What's your favorite quote from either movie?
Oh, boy.
And to me, I love leave the gun, take the cannolis.
Yeah.
Take the cannolis.
That to me, that sums up the gang right there. Hey, we shot someone, leave the gun, but grab them cannolis. They're pretty good.
That's pretty perfect.
But there's so many iconic lines.
So many of them. Yeah.
You got, you know, make him an offer he couldn't refuse.
Oh, classic. Yeah.
You know? I mean, there's so many.
I'm going to make him an offer again with you.
Luca Brasi sleeps with the fishes.
Yeah, there's just too many. I mean, my God, each movie is just a line after a line after a line. I mean, we've gone over a bunch of the ones from Goodfellas, like that scene when De Niro and Pesci are having dinner with his mother, and, you know, they look at that picture, and De Niro's like, hey, it looks like somebody we know. Hey! It's like, you know, it looks just like him. Yeah, it looks just like him.
One of the unspoken scenes, one of the unsung heroes, just a little cameo, is me being a hat guy. I don't care. It's my lucky hat. I won't fly without it.
Oh, that girl.
Oh, that annoys the shit.
That annoying girl.
She ruins everything.
Oh, God.
Yep.
And what does she do? Picks up the phone and calls from the house. Yeah,
one last thing about like lines and stuff like that. When they're in prison and they have their own pretty much ward, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And Tommy's cooking and he's like, don't put too many onions in the sauce, you know? And he's like, no, I put one onion in, you know? And then Paulie has got a razor blade and he's taking the garlic
and
he's just slicing it thin because it liquefies.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's just... That's all Scorsese stuff because that's his dad.
And also, now we can eat.
Yeah. Another great one in The Godfather, when they're preparing the food, kind of like in Pacino's on the phone with Kay and he hangs up and Clemenza goes, oh, come on. Tell her you love her. I love you so much. If I don't tell you, see you soon, I'm going to die. You know, like he's just like totally like making fun of him. And Pacino's like, oh, man, he's got me, you know, like.
He doesn't say it.
No, he doesn't say it.
He didn't say it either.
He doesn't say it.
Yeah.
Hey, one other scene that we didn't even talk about, and it comes up with a lot of great lines, is the whole waltz.
Oh, the horse head.
The horse head guy.
Oh, yeah.
And he calls him those Italian names, and he's like, I'm German-Irish. Well, then, my Mick Kraut friend.
Yeah.
And he just starts going off on him. Now, you get the hell out of here. And I ain't no bandleader. Yeah, I heard that story.
Yeah, I always wonder how they did that. Like, how did they sneak that horse head into the guy's bed, blood everywhere, all the way up to his neck, and he never noticed.
Exactly.
Yep. I know.
Great scene, though. That was actually a real horse's head. They got it from a dog food plant. This true story.
Which is
and Coppola got in trouble for using a real head. He's like, it was dead anyways. It's fine.
So gross.
So, final question. Just like the classic album clash, you must decide which one do you like better. What's the better movie for you guys? You want to start, Zeus?
Yeah, it's and I like Goodfellas a lot. It's not even close. Sorry.
Yeah.
Godfather is the greatest movie of all time, all the way through. I quote it more than anything. Shout it out loud, Kaz does constantly quotes of this movie. I've seen it the most. It's the best acting, best movie. We didn't even talk about the score. I don't like music scores. I don't get into that. But that score is insane. It's so moving, the scenery. And then they go back to, you know, Sicily. Dude, my dad's little village in Greece looks just like that till this day. I'm not joking. Till this day looks like that. And it's just moving. It's just so well done. Acting, writing, directing, cinematography. You name it. It's just... It's the perfect movie.
What do you think, Charlie?
I love both movies. I said it before, but Goodfellas to me is just more visceral. It's just like I said, you strap yourself in and it doesn't stop. Plus the soundtrack.
Yeah. Great soundtrack. Yeah.
the songs that he uses is so great. Yeah, I got to say Goodfellas. And one thing that is weird about Goodfellas too, remember when the first like movie poster came out, and I think Paul Sorvino's in there. So I always thought Paul Sorvino had a bigger role in Goodfellas.
Right.
And then they changed it to just the three of them. And it was like, wow.
Yep.
But anyway, to go back to what I was saying, yeah, it's probably Goodfellas for me.
What do you think, Tom?
Godfather's might be the greatest film, you know, one of the greatest films ever made. I personally think Godfather 2 is better than Godfather 1, but that's a separate story.
That's a debate, yeah.
But for me, I'm kind of on the same page with Charlie. Goodfellas is just endlessly rewatchable. There's not one second that is dull or boring. There's comedy, both intentional and unintentional comedy. There's action. It's my favorite director with my favorite actor, De Niro. It's a tough one. You have to be really prepared to sit down and watch The Godfather. 3 hours long. It's a film. Mm. Goodfellas is like an action movie. To me, it's always Goodfellas.
Charlie had a great quote where both films are great. I feel that Goodfellas is more Beatles than Stones.
All right.
And then Portnoy said Scorsese is like an epic concert and Coppola is like a classical symphony.
There you go.
Good, okay. good analogies. I'm going to go with Godfather only because it took me 51 years to watch the whole fucking thing in its entirety. Mad Magazine parody notwithstanding. I can't stop thinking about Marlon Brando and the choices he made as an actor. Both movies are 10 out of 10 for sure. But I just think Brando in that movie, he to me is Anthony Hopkins, you know, Silence of the Lambs level of just, you can never forget it. It's iconic. And the scratching of the face was like, that's genius to me. So I will watch Godfather again before I watch Goodfellas again, but I will be watching them both again multiple times, God willing.
And you do like the Stones more than the Beatles.
So. F***ing Andreas. Guys, thank you so much. The first ever classic movie clash.
Wait, PJ.
PJ.
PJ didn't say.
Oh, he never said yours yet. Sorry.
I think I'm the tipping factor here, right? I'm gonna say Goodfellas, because when Goodfellas is on, I literally recite it as if I'm singing along with one of my favorite songs. Say every line as I'm watching the movie. So no one can watch a fucking movie with me. And plus, again, because Godfather came out the year I was born, so I didn't grab onto it till later on. And man, it deserves all the attention it gets. But yeah, for me personally, Goodfellas wins because, again, I can't let one scene go by without reciting it. And it's always playing in my head.
Plus, you're from Jersey, so you probably know some of those areas like where they got rid of Paulie and all that sort of stuff. So you got connections to both movies.
Yeah.
All right, boys. Thank you so much. Great stuff. We'll think of some other movies and do it again.
Thanks, guys.
Awesome.
Thank you, boys. Thanks, Chris. Yes. All right.
Good stuff. Thank you, fellas.
Leave the gun. Take the cannoli.